Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sange, your host for this week's Weekend. And today we are visiting with Dr. Pete Sangre. And he is one of the psychiatrists at a behavioral center here in town. And we're going to talk a little bit about how all this affects children, your family, friends, everybody, as far as from, mental aspect. So, Dr. Sangre, thank you so much for being with us here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, before we get started, Dr. Sangre.
Absolutely. Initially, I was raised in Canada, and I worked there as a therapist until, I changed careers and went into medicine. And my heart was for children and mental health. So I ended up completing a fellowship at Texas Tech in El Paso, and I stayed here. And I'm currently working as a child adolescent psychiatrist here, and it's been great.
Tell us a little bit about, it's affected all of us. Life has not been the same since, spring break, when the children, the students, everybody went on a break, when they do get a break. And all of a sudden we're told schools, you're not going to come back. Universities, you're going to teach remotely. All of this, stores closed, you have to wear a mask. Lists and lists, and we'll talk about those individually. But first of all, at first, I guess it's good. The children go, wow, we don't have to go to school. That's great.
Well, that could be a good assumption, but however, there's some other sides to that. The President Trump referred to this as a war, and in a war, there's always collateral, damage and injuries, and the children have been incredibly impacted through this, and as well as the family. Now, when you deal with mental health, you have families that actually have a lot of pressures, whether it's mental health, financial issues, relationship issues, even substance abuse issues. Once you start taking away school and you give that responsibility to parents, whether it's direct supervision, indirect supervision, any type of supervision, you're adding more stress to that already existing that already has a lot of stress.
So the first few days might be okay. The parent might say, okay, I can handle this. But then as it drags on, as you mentioned, more stress comes on. Perhaps mom or dad got furloughed. Perhaps they are going back to work, but they need someone to take care of the children. So that adds a lot. And sometimes, children can hide things pretty well, but they can also see what's going on with mom and dad, correct?
Absolutely. Children are resilient, so they can handle a lot more of what we can think. However, especially teens, they tend to, rely on their friends and the school system. And same with the other younger children. Sometimes they can't express how they feel. And, the early contact with the school, the counselors, the teachers has really helped us detect in the past, early abuse, depression, anxiety, and we were able to treat them. However, that is all gone. We don't have that. And that's why we're seeing sometimes a reduced call in the child abuse hotlines, but we're seeing the severity of, abuse and as well as suicide attempts coming in, to us even.
Tell us a little bit about the parents, the adults at home. Can they see what's going on as far as, if they have anger management issues? Can they sort of see what's going on and try and get help or try and control themselves?
Absolutely. I mean, I would still recommend, even if they're struggling and having some issues with trying to do school or you try to control their anger, and if they're seeing if their substance abuse is increasing, reach out to us. We're available here for free consultation to provide guidance. There's also community resources that are still open and that will, provide online help as well.
We're visiting with Dr. Peter Sangre. He is a psychiatrist here in the El Paso area. Actually, it's in New Mexico, but it's the El Paso, southern New Mexico area. Tell me about what are some of the things that we as parents, as teachers, as just adults in general, what do we have to look out for? Because as you mentioned, sometimes a child can pretty much keep stuff to themselves, but we know something's wrong.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Most of, if you look at the completed suicides, 4 out of the 5 completed suicides for teens and children, the parents were almost the last ones to know. So, you know, what you want to look at is you want to look at any abrupt changes in behavior, attitude, anger, irritability, increase in substance abuse, increase in social isolation. And that might be harder with teens as well, too, since they do kind of isolate from parents and they kind of rely on their friends. You want to look out for that. You want to monitor their, internet use. Since we're all online now, there's still evidence of, sexual predators online trying to take advantage of children. Look for any behavioral changes in younger children and just have an open communication and just start talking.
Tell us a little bit about how we handle, because as we know, every child is different. We may have three or four children in our family, but each one is as different as the other one. And sometimes those children, some of them might act out, and we're going, what's the matter? You've never acted like this before. And so a parent might get angry and try and discipline that child, not realizing that this is something that the child is crying out for help.
Yeah. For the younger children, sometimes it's really hard to figure out what's going on. And, creative approaches such as drawing a picture, having them just draw the picture and then explain it later. That's really useful, and kids love drawing. You can kind of get information out of the children that way. Even playing with them, coming at their level, giving a child individual time, and just seeing what's going on. And sometimes they'll do it through the expressions of, playing or drawing if they're showing aggression in play or they're talking about death and severe loss, as, maybe that's what they're seeing on the news, and or they've had someone in the family die and they haven't been able to, grieve themselves or talk about it or understand it.
I recently watched a movie, I think, or a documentary, I don't remember what it was, but one of the issues was that the parents, these were Native American parents, and so when they were younger, they were taken away to boarding school to, quote, take the Indian away from them and make them American. And because of that, they didn't have good parents because they were away from home. And so they themselves, according to this documentary, didn't know how to parent themselves. And that generation keeps on going over and over and over again until the cycle is finally broken.
Absolutely. And, I think I watched that documentary too. I think the it was up in Canada, if I'm correct. And there was actually abuse in that school system as well. I mean, that was a while ago, in the indoctrination of trying to become, quote unquote cultural. The cycle of abuse, the difficulties in parenting, even substance abuse can be passed on to the next generation. But that doesn't have to be the case. We don't have to live by that theme, and we can break it.
We're visiting with Dr. Peter Sangra. Dr. Sangra is a psychiatrist at the Peak Behavioral Center in Santa Teresa, New Mexico. And we're talking a little bit about how this COVID-19 has affected you, your child, and your loved ones or friends near or far away. Dr. Sangra, tell us a little bit about, because as we know, the term psychiatrist, psychologist, mental has always been, they've been taboo words. And so people try and say, no. There's nothing wrong with my child. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just having a bad day. It's going to get over with. And because of that, because of culture and taboo, they refuse to go see a doctor like yourself.
Yeah, that has been a taboo for a while. I think the mental health system has been trying to break that. We got to realize that behavioral health therapists, psychologists, myself, or the system as a whole, is actually a protective factor. And what I mean by protective factor is that it protects the child or even an adult from committing suicide. It's one of the protective factors that we can rely on. And there's a few that we can talk about as well.
And so what would you tell the parent listening at home? When is the time that perhaps you should pick up that phone and at least get an assessment?
Absolutely. I think the earliest possible, detection of concern, whether it's changes in mood, irritability, or even if they're starting to experiment with new, substance abuses. and that's not normal behavior. I think that early detection, picking up the phone, is the best thing to do, because we've lost kind of our eyes in the school system with the teachers and the counselors not being there.
And I can, you know, we can all agree with this. Sometimes when we have teenagers, it seems like, you know, they're great kids, but as soon as they enter their teens, it's like somebody flips a switch and all of a sudden you are not their hero. You are not the best guy or best gal in the world. And so with added on with what's going on right now, that's got to make for a very tough situation, Doctor. What's your comment on that?
You know, during that time, that's the time when the teen is really discovering themselves and almost pushing away from parents, trying to become a little more independent and relying on other kind of resources for knowledge, like friends and trying to determine their identity. I think, you know, having a strong faith, a good parent role modeling system in place, or even just an open door for communication is the best thing you can do right now, because a lot of these teens have lost, you know, contact with their friends. And it might seem strange because you're thinking, well, they do contact with their friends on, you know, social media, texting, and they chat that way. But a lot of the teens I see is that they want that, you know, face-to-face interaction with their friends. And it's not, it doesn't seem as forced, and sometimes they can talk about heart-to-heart stuff.
We're speaking with Dr. Peter Sangra. Dr. Sangra is a psychiatrist at the Peak Behavioral Hospital in Santa Teresa, New Mexico. Dr. Sangra, you just mentioned, you know, that they have access to Zoom. They can do all these technological things online. But there's still that something that, as you mentioned, they need to know that their best friend is sitting next to them. Their best other friend is next to him and or her, and they can go visit whenever they want. And you're going, but wait a minute. Before, when they were allowed to visit, they never visited anyway because they were always on their home phones looking at them. But as one parent told me, my children, who are millennials, are having a very hard time because they're not used to isolating or being alone.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, isolation, you know, now that's such a common word, right? We use it in everyday sentences now. But isolation itself is actually a risk factor for suicide. So when you have an individual that's already depressed and dealing with anxiety, and we're forcing even more isolation on them, we've not allowing them to go back to school because, understandably, the COVID virus, we're forcing them into kind of more isolation. So, you know, isolation actually does some, you know, more harm than good. I know we're looking at risks versus, you know, safety, and it just kind of makes sense. And I hope the isolation doesn't continue on to, like, the next school year.
You just mentioned that isolation has become almost a everyday word, but also a negative word. And as we watch television, we watch movies, we see that sometimes when someone's in prison, the best way to take care of this person, if they're not behaving, is to put them in solitary. Or if you have a child who's acting up, go put them in timeout, go put them in the corner. But sometimes, as you mentioned, this tool now has become more of a hurt than a helpful one.
Correct, yeah. You know, in Canada, I actually worked in a federal penitentiary, too, where working as a therapist, and anyone that went into isolation for greater than 24 hours really decompensated fast. So, you know, it was used as kind of a behavioral approach. And for children using timeouts, usually they're a little bit younger, and you're trying to deal with the behavior until you can really understand why they're really reacting this way. But the timeouts for children shouldn't last more than, you know, 10 minutes. And so now we're talking about isolation. We're talking about days, months, and, you know, a little bit longer.
So this isolation, COVID-19, stay at home, social distancing, all this we thought was going to be over in a few days, perhaps a week. It's now entering months. So what do you think is going on through some people's minds, and what should they be aware of, Doctor?
You know, it's hard to say. every individual, every family is different. Some families are doing great. Some kids are doing great because they're resilient and they've learned how to adapt to this. However, the kids that are in kind of like the vulnerable situations with vulnerable families aren't doing as good. And some are not even participating in school. We run an online program here, which we reach out to children, and I'm seeing some of that. Some are not participating in school. Some are, you know, getting in trouble from their parents, from, you know, not handing in assignments. So it's tough to answer that question because it really has to be, you know, individual.
We've been discussing children, teens, young adults. Let's talk a little bit about mom and dad and what are some of the things that we have to be careful with that, because usually it's aimed at the male, that they're the ones who take off to drinking, get upset, get drunk, and then take it out on their families. But we're seeing that some women are starting to drink as much as well, and it could be very much that both of them are, and so the children are left out wondering what's going on with mom and dad.
Yeah, you know, and children do pick up from the anxiety or even the feelings of mom and dad and can see the interactions. So even though we might try to hide it, the children can still watch and see. So, you know, for mom and dad, you know, we understand this is tough on the family. You were not designed to be a teacher or paid to be a teacher or a therapist or a doctor or all this stuff, but you're wearing all these hats under this certain period of time. And it's okay if you're not the best, and it's okay if you make a mistake. But there's other ways to cope. If you are using, you know, substances and it's relating to domestic violence, you know, there's other ways to kind of cope with that anxiety of what you're feeling.
What about some of the other things that we sometimes talk about, and now people can do it all the time at home? Listen to music, read books, watch movies, and perhaps they're saying, well, I've done that already. I've watched every Netflix show I want, watched every Amazon show I want, and I don't like reading.
Okay. So, you know, at that point, then, you know, you want to challenge the individual, maybe trying something a little bit different. You know, I did a talk on mindfulness. And one of the approaches was like even praying together, you know, trying to look for help, whether it's through online church or if it's deep breathing or maybe even picking up a new hobby or researching the astronomy or something like that. As soon as you start doing something like that, there's something in the brain that opens up and it kind of almost ignites a switch where you kind of have a little bit of relief because you're trying something new. And always when you try something new, it's almost like being in a new relationship. When you kind of get that spark and things are like feeling pretty good, that would be kind of my suggestion when nothing else is working and you're struggling with how to cope and stuff.
Doctor, what about us living here in the border, southern New Mexico, West Texas? There are a lot of people who have home remedies passed on from generations to generations. And sometimes they'll not diagnose correctly, and they try and self-diagnose, they try and self-medicate with these herbs or whatever they may be. And sometimes, you know, you as a doctor, especially if they already prescribe something else, this could pose a danger.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of the herbal remedies or over-the-counter medications aren't FDA approved. So it can become really dangerous. And then some of the ingredients within the herbal supplements, sometimes you don't even know. They can have a lot of fillers, a lot of ingredients, some be allergic to it. Herbal remedies, again, it plays a part when you're talking about cultural relevance. So it's really personalized to that culture. It's tough to say, but there's a lot of dangers in that too.
We're visiting with Dr. Peter Sangra. Dr. Sangra is a psychiatrist at the Peak Behavioral Hospital in Santa Teresa. We've been talking about how to deal with situations you may have at home during this COVID-19 situation that we're in. We talked a little bit about stigma earlier, Doctor, and mental illness has been a stigma for so long. You know, they used to say back in the day when somebody was not doing well, they would say he is simple or she's simple or he's gone mad. But it was not until now that we start talking about mental illness. But at the same time, it's also opened up the door for people to find out more about mental illness and realize that, hey, this does not mean that, you know, you've gone off the wire, off the wall. You're going to be put away like they used to do in the old days. There is an explanation to everything, and you as a doctor can try and find out the proper medication to help this person.
Correct. And, you know, and just talking about medication, a lot of individuals are kind of scared when they hear the word medication, especially if they say, well, I got mental illness, now I'm going to be placed on medication. That's not always the case. Such as, like, if it's depression, if it's mild to moderate, you don't have to be placed on medication. Medication only comes in the conversation when it becomes severe, depression, and there's a kind of like a little kind of like a pit you can't get out of. There's no hope. And the medication doesn't have to be for a lifetime. It's only for a certain period of time under a care of a physician. So I understand that, but it is a biological process that does happen.
When someone hears about depression, they don't want to admit it or they don't even want to talk about it because someone who doesn't understand depression might say, oh, come on, just snap out of it. Watch a movie, laugh, you can do this.
You know, it's very difficult to say that to someone who's struggling with depression, those things, or even saying I love you constantly, because they already have that depressed cognitive filter on. So everything that's said to them is almost like it's spun in their head into like a depressed filter, and a depressed theme comes out. And especially now, since we're dealing with a lot of loss of loved ones from the COVID.
What about anxiety? Tell us a little bit about what triggers that, and what are some of the things that parents or loved ones might be looking out for as far as an anxiety or a panic attack?
Sure. Okay, so the difference between stress and anxiety, I mean, everyone's feeling a little bit stressed right now, right? But when that stress level kind of eases off with opening up, or, you know, restrictions and they're allowed to move around and stuff, if that anxiety still persists, whether it's like can't concentrate, can't focus, always excessive fear, then we start talking about it's anxiety. And the early symptoms are usually mood kind of like disruption. You know, they're not the same. They're a little bit more edgy, irritable, we call it, anger. And they're starting to resort to like, other things like substance abuse. Those are kind of like the early symptoms that will define like the anxiety.
We're visiting with Dr. Peter Sangra. Dr. Sangra is a psychiatrist at the Peak Behavioral Hospital Center in Santa Teresa, New Mexico. We talked a little bit about moms and babies earlier and perhaps some of the extra stress that comes on. Let's talk a little bit about newborn moms. Not newborn moms, but moms who have given birth recently. And some moms, as we know, go through postpartum depression. And yeah. Then having that baby at home, plus the other children home, that's really going to sometimes perhaps trigger mom.
Absolutely. You know, I have a newborn at home, too, and a toddler. So this question hits right home. You know, one of the things for women that are struggling with postpartum depression are is the attachment to the infant. And what I mean by that is the amount of time the mom is holding the infant, engaging with the infant. Infants actually need to be held. They need to feel that warmth of mom. And they can tell that's mom. And they need that eye contact. In fact, they did a lot of research studies on this and mom's facial expression as it relates to the baby's response. And the moms that struggled with depression had actually less eye contact, less smiling with the infant, and the infant was responding that way as well back. And that kind of persisted.
Sometimes when a baby or a child sees mom and dad behaving differently, or something going on. Perhaps it's money problems, it's the health, this COVID-19, whatever. A lot of times children tend to blame themselves, and this cannot be a healthy remedy.
Absolutely. You know, our children are precious. You know, they will self-internalize issues that mom and dad are having, blame themselves. That's why we need to just make sure, you know, we can take a moment, unplug the media, you know, maybe take a break from the news. And if that's causing anxiety, spend a moment with the children, get down into level and interact and kind of try not to miss out on those precious moments, because the children can feel that and they know that's happening. And you definitely don't want them to self-internalize anything.
We're speaking with Dr. Peter Sangra. Dr. Peter Sangra is a psychiatrist at the Peak Behavioral Center Hospital in Santa Teresa, New Mexico. We started at the beginning, Dr. Sangra, discussing some of the issues that COVID-19 has presented. But perhaps there is someone out there still who says, well, you know, I've seen this some days this happen, but then today he was okay. Tomorrow may be different. So they're kind of juggling back and forth. Is there a tool or something that people can go online to find out more about, you know, behavioral situations in this COVID-19?
Sure, absolutely. You know, the American Association of Child, Adolescent Psychiatry, they offer free resources from their website. They have a little a booklet that they've made for talking to children about COVID. They have guides on how to, you know, foster that communication, and pointers for parents and how to talk to the children about the COVID and just social situations. So there's a lot of great resources there that are backed up by research.
Sometimes also people are going to say, well, you know, there's so much going on right now that even if I wanted to take my child or I wanted to go in, I couldn't because they're not seeing patients right now. So is this something that a teleconference would help out, or just answering a questionnaire?
You know, they have like these PHQ-9 questionnaires. These usually level the measure of depression. They have questionnaires called Columbia. They have anxiety questionnaires, Bex anxiety. Bex are found online. And it's also found, I think, from that website that I gave you as well.
Dr. Sangra, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. And thank you for you and the rest of the medical community taking care of all of us in the area. Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's been, this is my passion and this is my purpose in life. And we're here for the community. If you need a free consultation and you're in the area, El Paso, Santa Teresa, New Mexico, give us a call at 575-589-3000. Nationally, if you're concerned about suicide, feel free to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255.
Again, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
We've been visiting with Dr. Peter Sangra. Dr. Peter Sangra has been talking about some of the situations that COVID-19 may have brought into our lives, anxiety, depression, suicide prevention, what to do, what are some of the signs to look out for. And again, our thanks to Dr. Peter Sangra. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Sam Cassiano. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.